Now we're going to take a broader look at how far the U.S. government can go in questioning detainees and defining what constitutes torture. With us today is Tara McKelvey. She's a senior editor at the American Prospect, and she's also the author of Monstering, Inside America's Policy on Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. Tara was the first U.S. journalist to speak with female prisoners from Abu Ghraib. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So how'd you get started on this kind of a project?
Well, I was having dinner on Capitol Hill in the fall of 2004, and a congressional aide told me that she had heard that there were female detainees who had been held at Abu Ghraib. And I thought about the pictures that we had seen and how horrible they were, and then I thought, my God, what have they done to the women who were there?
I'm sure you've heard so many stories from different prisoners. Is there one that stands out that haunts you even?
I interviewed one man named, whom I call Nabil in my book, and he had been a lawyer, and he had actually come to the United States in 2001 for a UN General Assembly. I interviewed him in a hotel room in Amman, Jordan, and he told me about some of the interrogations that they had done on him and about the, officers and or the people who are interrogating him, the Americans. And during our conversation, he lifted up his pants leg and showed me red holes in his knee where he said electrodes had been placed during his interrogations. I was very, really shocked and appalled when I saw it.
What about the women? How were they treated?
The woman that I interviewed would never say explicitly that they had been raped or sexually assaulted while they were held at Abu Ghraib or the other detention centers. It was too difficult for them to say that for all sorts of different reasons. They knew that if they had said something like that, they would go back to their families and they might be ostracized. And some of them were even in danger of honor killings, having their families go after them for, supposedly bringing shame on their family. But when I talked to them about the things that had happened, they would sometimes cover their faces or turn away or start shaking or crying when they described some of their experiences.
You mentioned how some of the people you spoke with were extremely angry against the United States. How did you make sense of whether or not they were telling the truth?
Of course, I was really careful and suspicious of all the stories that I heard. We're in a war, and this is a time when propaganda is going back and forth on both sides. It's difficult to get to the truth in this kind of a situation. I vetted the stories that I heard, and I sort of threw out a whole bunch of them. If it seemed like somebody had an ulterior motive or an agenda in our conversation, I would take notes, but I wouldn't pursue those stories. The ones that seemed valid were the ones that I pursued and tried to check as carefully as I could by checking their records with the Pentagon and other sources.
You also talk about what soldiers had to do. And the Abu Ghraib scandal was very public. Many people watched the hearings. But in the book, you have a moving interview with Sam Provance, one of the whistleblowers in the case. What did you learn from talking to him?
Sam was in Germany when we first started talking, and we talked on the phone quite a bit. And at one point, he sent me a CD that showed videos that had been taken at the prison. And they had set up kind of a party room where they played music, like Outkast and songs and things like that. And then they did these kind of rave scenes with this stuff where they called it robo-tripping, where they would drink Robitussin and then they would take amphetamines, over-the-counter pills, in order to sort of have this effects of LSD. And it showed this complete sense of lawlessness that was in the prison at the time. When they did these parties, they would also pretend to stab dummies, like what they pretended to be detainees. And I saw these images of these soldiers assaulting and attacking these fake bodies. It was disturbing, and it also gave some indication about what things were like at the prison during the time.
You even compared it to Lord of the Flies. Do you think there was a reason that order broke down in that case?
The people who were in charge of the prison were either not paying attention or they were deliberately allowing the things to take place. And at different times, I have different opinions about it. Brigadier General Janice Karpinski was officially in charge of the prison in early fall of 2003 when some of the atrocities took place. She was also in charge of 16 or 17 other detention facilities throughout Iraq, so she had to travel around the country visiting them. So the person who was in charge really wasn't there. That was part of the problem.
Your book really focuses on the detainees in Iraq. and the waterboarding issue has come up in regards largely to Guantanamo. Do you think that Abu Ghraib set the stage for a reexamination of how the United States pursues interrogations?
There's no question that Abu Ghraib is a key chapter in our history, and that it will be generations before this is, you know, receding into the past. If you take the case of Guantanamo, where some of the more public, you know, the more famous, you know, interrogations have taken place, Guantanamo was in fact defined by Abu Ghraib, even though Guantanamo opened earlier. It was the Abu Ghraib scandal, which broke in April of 2004, that made people realize, you know, maybe we should think again about these types of interrogations that we're doing or the way we're treating the prisoners.
Now, where do you think the debate over waterboarding, harsh interrogations, and torture is going, based on the fact that you do have military sources as well as international sources? Do you think that there is going to be a resolution one way or the other in America's government about what constitutes appropriate interrogation?
I think the question that we've always had before us is the question that was posed by a CIA officer in residence at Texas A&M, a man named Robert Olson. He says, do we really want to be fighting a dirty war? And that's what these techniques are. We need to talk about it as a nation and come to some agreement on it. We seem to have come some ways towards deciding that we don't want to be doing these things. I think waterboarding is more a symbol than anything else, in terms it hasn't exactly been widely applied, but it's a way for us to talk about the types of techniques that we should or should not be using on prisoners and how we want to be seen by the rest of the world.
Do you think that there has been a negative effect about this whole debate on America's ability to operate within an international community?
Sure. I mean, there's always this feeling we need to be tough. We need to show how, you know, big and strong we are and face these terrorists and face them and show, you know, that we're not going to be pushed around. But on the other hand, the recent episode with the destruction of the CIA videotapes that showed some of the harsh interrogations, people were upset about the destruction of the evidence. So I think that there is some sense that maybe we should be reevaluating what we're doing and how we want to go forward with things.
Tara, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
We've been speaking with Tara McKelvey, a senior editor at the American Prospect and author of Monstering, Inside America's Policy on Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. Tara joined us from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C.